91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we assemble a panel to discuss today's museums, particularly in South Florida. Do 21st century museums take on different functions? Must they use alternate practices to preserve art, history, and culture? Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We focus on the Haitian Heritage Museum with its co-founders, Executive Director Eveline Pierre and Serge Rodriguez, as well as the History Miami Museum with its President and CEO Stuart Chase. Miami's Haitian Museum was established 11 years ago. History Miami had South Florida roots of 75 years. What's the future of these institutions? What changes will it take to keep pace in the digital world? We'll learn more in minutes after NPR and regional news. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. There's a wide variety of museums in southeastern Florida, ranging from visual arts, history, railroads, to children, science, and decorative arts. With us now are the co-founders of the Haitian Heritage Museum.
And actually, let me understand, it's the first Haitian Heritage Museum outside of Haiti.
Okay, we got that.
First, its co-founder and executive director, Eveline Pierre. She's an author and prominent figure in the area, serving on numerous boards and advisory committees. Welcome to you, Eveline.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And we also have museum co-founder and director of operation. He's Serge Rodriguez. He's a noted architect and construction manager with many community projects to his credit.
Both he and Eveline Pierre are also co-founders of the Miami Caribbean Code, which empowers tech innovators in the Caribbean community. And we'll have more on that later. So welcome to you both. And tell us, we're going back to 1994 now, what had to happen in order to open, and tell us the significance of 1994, the Haitian Heritage Museum. Eveline?
Okay, it was 2004, right. So we've been around for just about 11 years.
Oh, 11.
What had to happen is an epiphany happened to myself and Serge. I was actually studying for the LSAT, and I need a break. I'm going to go to Starbucks. So I walk into Starbucks and I see this gentleman and I'm like, oh my God, this person looks familiar. And it actually was Serge. So we started chatting and it was like, oh my God. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm studying for the LSAT. And he was like, well, what else are you doing? I'm like, well, I think I want to do a museum, but I'm not sure. But maybe if I find the right partner, I can move forward and get that done. And he was like, wow, I have to do this because...
Mm-hmm. It's kind of flippant. I think I'm going to do a museum. Yeah.
And if I find the right partner. And Serge just happens to be there.
He just so happened to be there. And that's how it went. And we just kind of did a business plan at the end of 2003. And I went to Haiti for like 2 weeks. And I think after I came back from the motherland, and I was like, I'm going to do it. And that's how we got started.
And tell us a little bit, Serge, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I've been a construction manager for several years in Miami, a local. I've lived here for a very long time, originally from New York City. And I wanted to start a gallery in the design district around the time that Evelyn accidentally bumped into me at Starbucks. And at the time, we were working on a lot of projects in the downtown area through the construction firm that I worked for. And it was pretty timely that a Haitian museum needed to come on the scene. So I understood, you know, exactly where Evelyn was coming from when she said, hey, you know, we need a Haitian museum to tell the story of our people. So I fell in love with the project and joined on the team.
Yeah. Some of those projects you've been working on are really quite stellar. List some of those.
We did the Lowe's Hotel in Miami Beach, the Four Seasons Tower on Brickell, the Miami Seaport Redevelopment Program, 10 Museum Park, to name a few, Blue and Green Diamond Towers also on the beach.
Mm. Evelyn, you grew up in the 70s on Miami Beach.
Yes.
Tell us about that. And what presence was there of a Haitian heritage at that point? Your parents were Haitian immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't really, for me as I can remember, it wasn't a large presence of Haitian population in South Florida. Of course, it's grown since. I really was there going to school with, you know, a lot of Jewish kids, you know, going to bar mitzvahs, graduating at Temple Beth Shalom. And I told my mom, like, Mom, are we Jewish? She was like, no, we're Haitian. I was like, oh, I was like really confused because I'm going to these bar mitzvahs. I'm eating matzah soup. I'm like, what's going on here? And I'm speaking Creole when I go home, but all of my surroundings, all of my friends are Jewish people. And it really helped me out a lot because I really believe that setting helped me to be very able to speak to a lot of different people and be able to understand my community and understand my heritage, because this is what the fabric of South Florida was and still is, because we're very diverse. So it really helped me out a lot. And as we started seeing the boatloads of people coming over from Haiti, that was really confusing to me because I didn't understand. And then when they would come to our school and I would try to befriend them, like, hey, I'm Haitian too, and I would speak Creole, and they would look at me like, what language are you speaking? So it was a very interesting dynamic, but and this is the reason why I really believe that I had this this bug to start this museum, because I saw when the immigrants were coming over, I didn't quite understand it, because I just knew my parents, they would actually get very emotional watching television. And I'm like, why are they crying when they would see this certain newscaster? I won't mention his name. And I'm like, why are they crying? And I just thought they didn't like the newscaster, but it was really because of the boatload of people coming over. Mm-hmm. So it was like a bittersweet time, but I really believe it made me who I am today, so I can share that experience on a positive note and through history and through culture.
How did you guys secure the funding for the museum?
Well, that was very interesting. We used a lot of our savings. We came in because a labor of love. We started out, nobody knew who we were. You know, museum was not my background per se. I mean, I was a poli sci major. I minored in history, focused on Latin America and the Caribbean. And I worked a lot of, in LA at that time, working in the entertainment industry. And I didn't really do a for-profit ever in my life. But after we wrote the business plan and I got with Serge, it was like this was the right thing to do for the people.
And Serge, did you want to add anything about the funding? I mean, that must have... And how do you keep the funding going now?
Well, actually, after we ran out of our funding,
yeah,
we started writing a lot of grants. Cultural Affairs Department definitely is a big supporter of the Haitian Heritage Museum. We've gotten a lot of state grants, federal grants, and a lot of corporate sponsorship. So early on, you know, in the early days, it was very slow because, you know, we were new, like Evelyn mentioned. Not a lot of people knew what a Haitian museum was. A lot of people thought we were an Asian museum. But once we started to gain a little traction, we were successful in solidifying grants to help support the
organization. I bet many in our listening audience would find it surprising to know that the number of Haitian immigrants in Miami is larger than in New York.
Yes.
Quite a bit, yeah.
That's really interesting that you said that, because right when we started, that was like 10, 11 years ago, that's when the numbers had just surpassed New York. Just recently, I was like, wow, that's so amazing. This is perfect timing. So this is a sign that we move forward.
Have you received support from the Haitian community that you've hoped for?
Well, that's an interesting dynamic because, again, coming from an area of a large percentage or population of the people are coming from a disadvantage. A lot of people came over on a boat.
Right.
You know, they're just trying to live their lives or, you know, learn English or get their papers. So it took a very long time for the community to be where it's at today. And it's not perfect, but we definitely made a lot of strides. So a lot of issues, they were dealing with social issues. So to be like, oh, I'm going to, you know, take my extra income that they don't really have and support a museum, that really wasn't the climate of the day. So when we started, we didn't understand that, but we kind of learned that going on. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like an education, teaching the people how to be philanthropists, because that's not really where they come from. You understand? And there's a lot of other people who are well off, who are able to contribute, but not in the way that we want, because again, like I said, it's an education in reference to how to be a philanthropist. And knowing that this is like a new dynamic, this is like a museum, a Haitian museum, you know, how do I give to this organization? And it's not like a, you know, a Getty, it's like a small, you know, place. Right. And people, you know, they think you start, you know, in one day and the next day you're like a 60,000 square foot museum, and that doesn't happen. It, you know, it's a process. You know, some museums here, they start in rooms, and we, you know, we're blessed to be in the design district, but it's a process. And we're like a baby compared to other museums. So it's a process.
Perhaps this is a little difficult, but do you ever feel any resentment from the established African-American community?
Well, I think for me, I feel that being Haitian-American and understanding the dynamics of what was happening in South Florida, I feel that there's still a lot more more education to be had, because, you know, the things that I hear, like, why is Haitian people so proud? You know, when people see you walking down the street, they're just going to see black. They're not going to be like, oh, you're a Haitian, you know? So I believe that, you know, coming from a different island where you had to prove your identity, to prove who you are as a person, you know, because your livelihood was taken away, you know, you were colonized by the French, and you had to fight to let people know that we are Haitian and we're not going to succumb to this type of lifestyle that, you know, the colonizer placed on the people. So when you come, you know, into America, then you want to be proud about that. Right. And I just feel that that's been like an issue, I feel, but I believe that it's not an issue as the way it was back in the 80s, because I know, you know, a lot of the kids used to get beat up because they were Haitian, and African-American kids used to beat them up. So it was like an issue. But I think over the years, I really believe that it's really becoming a lot of cross-pollination is happening now. It's not quite where it is, because I think if people understand history, they'll understand a lot more about this situation.
Serge, what is the... I see you're going to be working on a future design phase of the museum. What does that mean?
Well, we've been in constant programming, if you will, for, you know, the type of spatial requirements that the museum is going to need. We're in the process of looking for property, you know, to acquire either a completely built building or to build one ourselves. So throughout the years, you know, we've basically experienced all the requirements that a museum needs. So we've been working with some designers and, you know, speaking with museum professionals to program the architectural space.
Might that be outside of Little Haiti?
Well, we're focusing in Little Haiti. I mean, property is getting a little tight and expensive, but we've had a couple of offers on the table. We are looking at a certain property now, and we're not really allowed to disclose. But we do want to stay in Little Haiti, because that was really our initial mission, you know, to place a Mecca within Little Haiti. Right. That will, you know, reestablish the community identity for the Haitian people.
We're speaking with Eveline Pierre. She's an author and founder and executive director of the first Haitian Heritage Museum outside of Haiti, along with Serge Rodriguez, the co-founder and director of operations of the museum. We're going to take a short break on Topical Currents. We'll be back with more. Stay with us. Of course, that's from our radio call that we do every night, weeknights at 9. Yes, exactly. We're back. It's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And we've been speaking with Eveline Pierre and Serge Rodriguez from the Haitian Heritage Museum.
And they're still with us.
And they're going to stay with us. But we resume today's museum-oriented program with the Director and Chief Executive Officer of History Miami, Stuart Chase.
The museum was founded 75 years ago by a group of South Floridian luminaries such as George Merrick and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. It was then known, of course, as the Historical Museum of Southern Florida. Stuart Chase was formerly the director of the Berkshire Museum in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Welcome to you, Stuart Chase.
Pleasure to be here. Good afternoon, all.
Good to have you. So how, I have to ask you this, you come from the Berkshires. I mean, that community is so different. How great is it, a challenge is it, to be in Miami, to be running a museum, to garner a large audience and appeal in a community with so much of its population, which is transitory and seasonal?
It has its challenges, but the museum business is the museum business no matter where you are. Uh-huh. So it translates very well. And actually, even in a rural part of rural but very cultured part of Western Massachusetts, the Berkshires, there are definitely new populations that have come in historically in the past, but also now there are many Colombians, for example, moving into Western Massachusetts. So it felt a little different, but also a little background on myself. My grandfather lived in Hialeah for many, many years. From 1948 till 1973, he lived in Hialeah.
Oh, the Mylander years.
So he had a very interesting, I wish he was still alive so I could speak with him to understand what he saw change around him from, you know, post-World War II to the 70s, tremendous changes in that community.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and my family's on the West Coast in Florida also. So I have a lot of Florida
experience.
So you
have Florida roots.
Exactly. But I do describe Miami as this is the most wonderful place. This is an endlessly intriguing and entertaining community. The stories here are endless and fabulous, frankly.
You mentioned that when you first took this job, that some of your colleagues in the North were saying Miami, it has no history. But of course, it has much more than Massachusetts in that sense.
It has a tremendous amount of history. This is a comment I hear a lot, even from natives of South Florida. We have no history. That is quite frankly in the proverbial hogwash, because the stories and the history here are endless, and it goes back generations and generations to early times, 10,000 years ago.
Or the Miami Circle.
Exactly. So the culture here and the background is fabulous, and there's nowhere else like South Florida. I mean, look at the Everglades. There's no other environment like that anywhere. So we have these unique, fabulous stories that we need to tell and share with everyone.
I read that you were brought in to lead History Miami through this critical new phase of development. What is that, and what does it entail?
Yes, I was recruited to come to South Florida to help lead History Miami into a new phase. At the time, we knew that we were going to be acquiring the space just south of us, which is formerly housed the Miami Art Museum space. So we knew that was coming, and they knew that they needed help to figure out how we were going to use that space and how we're going to program it out. And it has been made a fabulous addition to our institution. We've more than doubled our size. We've grown 135% larger. And I think many people said, oh, how are they going to possibly fill that space in such a short period of time? Well, it literally took maybe 5-6 months, and we have completely filled the space.
Seems like I remember hearing from Paul George that what is actually on display is only a fraction of the holdings of the then historical museum.
That's correct, and most museums are like that. But what this does, that's why I'm so excited about this, this allows us to share more and more of our collections. And I like change very much, so coming to South Florida was a really great change.
Yes.
But also, change is good for the public, because the public likes to see new things. They like to see familiar friends and objects. Like, everyone wants to go see the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. But you see it once, I'm not so sure you really need to go back and see it again. You know, you may take your children or grandchildren. But it's the same with museums. We have favorite things that people want to see all the time, but we have thousands of objects, and our archive collection is vast. So it gives us opportunity to share new things. So every time you come, it's a great opportunity to see new things and learn new things.
What does it mean to be part of the Smithsonian Institution Affiliations Program?
There are about 120 museums across the country who are affiliates. So we have full access to all of their curators, collections, scholarship. We have an annual meeting in Washington. There are three of us here in Miami that are affiliates, the Frost Art, the Frost Science, and History Miami. But it just gives us great access to those collections, and it works both ways. We work very closely with them for them to help build their collections also, because they're based in Washington predominantly, but they want to have access to the entire nation. They are the nation's attic. I know they don't use that expression any longer, but they really are the nation's attic. They have all of the holdings of the entire nation, and they're constantly changing and growing those collections.
But in this area, I suppose the museum is charged also with sort of reinforcing the important history of the area And not just presenting the fun in the sun image mm-hmm. and the Miami Beach PR stuff.
No, absolutely. Those stories are both important and imperative that we share with people. You know, the constant lessons we learn of learning from the past to improve for the future. Actually, History of Miami is really trying very hard right now to be focused on what's going on now. So, for example, we have our Operation Pedro Pan exhibition on view, which talks about the 14,000 children that were taken from Cuba to the United States. It's the largest exodus of children in the Western Hemisphere. A very emotionally charged story, but very important to us here regionally.
It left a vast imprint on us.
Exactly. And so we need to tell those stories, but through our programming, we're also talking about what's going on with children's issues today. Look at what's going on with Syrians migrating to other nations. Right. Look what's going on the Mexican border. Right. These things affect us every day. Immigration policies, these are all related. And this just helps us to reflect, but also to take a look into the future as well.
I was really impressed when I went on the website. You have a strong online component right now. You have exhibitions you can take online. You have publications that are just online.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's great. Where do you hope to go with that? I mean, are you going to expand that?
Yeah, I'd like to expand it. One of the great wishes I have for the institution is to create a digital media center. Not unlike the studio we're in right now, because of so many reasons. The digital media world is growing quickly and fast and furious. We need to keep up with it. We have been doing oral histories for a very long time, since the 30s and 40s. We need to digitize those materials so they're more accessible.
Right.
But we want your story, Bonnie, we want your story. We need those stories to be preserved at History of Miami for the future. So we need this digital studio that can both preserve those stories where you can come in and record them, but also utilize them and manipulate them in ways that provide educational programs. The same with the visual world. You know, our digitizing our photography collection, which is over a million images. These are all very important things, and use it as an educational resource also in the fact that I'd love to have young high school, college students come in and utilize the facilities. They are so skilled at this new world.
Yes, they are.
And they could certainly help us, but also learn by those processes also. So that digital media studio is something that we're really interested in investing in and building at the museum.
This is such a suburban-based community. There are many people who never go downtown. How do you entice more people to come and get foot traffic in there of people who live here?
Very, very good question. We do a tremendous amount of outreach, so a few different things. We have a city tour program where we do walking tours, motor coach tours, boat tours, and they are spread all throughout Miami-Dade County and beyond. We have a fabulous Stiltsville tour, the Miami River. We've started food tours. Agritourism is really big and growing. The food industry has been very important in South Florida for many, many decades. So we are now doing tours to Homestead, to out by FIU, various neighborhoods we're exploring. Little Haiti we go to often, Little Havana, to explore. So we're bringing out that way. But we also have a very good program called Museum Forums. We've been working with the Miami-Dade Public Library to produce programs that we utilize the satellites of the library. And they're spread all over the county and the region.
Sure.
So we've done one on the Bay of Pigs invasion. We've done one on civil rights. We have one actually coming up. I'm not going to remember the date on LBGQ issues coming up. It's going to be actually at History of Miami adjacent to the
And those travel to the various satellite libraries.
They have been moved around to various libraries, and we've done them three or four times in different locations, so we spread that out into the community.
Do you do things with Miami-Dade County Public Schools directly?
Absolutely. That's one of our largest audiences.
Okay.
We serve over 14,000 school children through programs that, again, we do at the museum, but we also go out to the schools to do those programs as well. So definitely they're a very strong partner, and that's what the museum is. We're an educational institution.
Well, we're speaking now with Stuart Chase. He's president and CEO of History Miami. We're going to take a short break on Topical Currents. When we come back, we'll have everybody join in. Stuart Chase, Evelyn Pierre, and Serge Rodriguez are
and
from
callers.
The Haitian Heritage Museum, and you will open the lines and email. Stay with us. Yeah. And we return to today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're discussing South Florida Museum operations, funding, and philosophies with Evelyn Pierre and Serge Rodriguez of the Haitian Heritage Museum, and Stuart Chase, who heads History Miami in South Florida.
And we'll learn more about the Reimagining the Museum Conference of the Americas held last month in Buenos Aires. The meeting was the first of its kind, with some 600 professionals sharing thoughts on how to build and maintain more successful museums.
And all of our guests attended will get their impressions of the conference. In fact, right now, how does it look for museums? Is the future rosy, Serge Rodriguez?
Well, I think it's looking up. It's on the up and up. After going to this conference, you know, we realized that no matter where you are, museums are experiencing the same thing. You know, everybody's trying to figure out how to remain relevant, how to stay remain sustainable. The world is getting smaller through technology. So, you know, I think a lot of the organizations that were present at the conference really, you know, had a good outlook on how we can leverage the existing changes to really push the museum industry to the next level.
And what is that, Evelyn?
Well, I know from going to the closing of the that whole program, we actually went to do a manifesto, and they had several categories. And for me, I was like, you know what? If we're going to do a manifesto, I need to be in a manifesto about technology. All the other categories they had, you know, is a museum going to be like a political outlook, or is a museum is going to be more education? And I think all of that is definitely relevant, but I think the technology piece was really important. So I wanted to get around those group of forward thinkers to understand what are we going to do with technology, because it's not only that technology needs to be used, but it also needs to be, you know, transforming our collection and transforming the way we communicate, transforming the way the museum outlook is. Because again, with technology, so many things have been annihilated, and a lot of technology, because you can't keep people's attention span for longer than, okay, if I'm on my PDA, you know. And it's interesting, and we really wanted to understand, how do you infuse technology into the museum. So we've been on this technology track for like over like a year or two right now, and we wanted to understand what that manifesto was. So I do believe that the future of museum is definitely bright and on the up and up, but I definitely believe it's going to be a different type of landscape.
And Stuart Chase, what did you come away with from that big conference?
It'll sound odd coming from the director of History of Miami, which is the largest history museum in the state of Florida. But small is the new big. That's a thing that stuck with me, that you do not need to be a large. And that's why my good colleagues, we've met before, but we had a great time in Buenos Aires, not only to enjoy the city, but also learning together with this international audience of North and South America. But this idea that we have a profound impact on our communities, we need to reach out into our communities. Inclusion is not easy work, but it's imperative. We must do this. We're all shaking our heads yes, all the way around the table. But that part is really, really important. That and another thing was to ignore the big guys. So ignore History Miami.
Yeah, you're
really
a big guy.
Not really, but remember everyone. And inclusion is very, very important. And that's a real important aspect that has stuck with me, and that we need to be more flexible and prototyping and trying new things. That was also another.
What do you mean by inclusion? What kind of groups or something to
population
represent?
Population groups, ethnic groups, people of all means, all kinds of people, schools, all of the above, private schools, public schools, mm-hmm. churches, synagogues, whoever it is.
So you're talking about community outreach in every
respect. In every single respect. Every single respect. Taking out, like you questioned me earlier, taking it out to the community.
Right. Do you think our community, is there more that we could do to encourage or foster museum going? What?
Yes. I'm yes. shaking my head. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
This is such an interesting community, and it follows on line what Evelyn was speaking of earlier. These are new communities to Miami and South Florida. It'll take some time for that that traditional aspect of a melting pot to really happen.
Right.
But I can guarantee you, the young professional staff that I have working with me, they so want that integration. They are not so concerned about their particular background. Yes, they respect it and they want to tell those stories, but they really want to learn about the rest of the world. And one of the issues with South Florida is we are on this peninsula far removed from mainland, and we need to become more connected to the mainland and the rest of the world because we're such a global center. We have people from around the world coming through Miami for many different reasons, but we need to both be big and small at the same time, and so we need to grow audiences. There's another aspect, just simply my personal observation from being here. I'll share, I love to go to the beach every Sunday afternoon. It may seem silly to a lot of South Floridians, but I love the beach, and we go every Sunday. So I have a great time to observe the community in a natural resource recreation mode. And I have observed a lack of natural curiosity.
Hmm.
And it's something I think about. I will give you the example. So I'm sitting at the edge of the water, on the sand, in the muck, making a sandcastle. Because I love the beach. I love the beach. And I had two little boys come over to me and look at me totally perplexed. Like, what was I doing? What was I building? What was I...
Really?
They really didn't comprehend what I was doing at all. Not that there are a tremendous number of shells on the beach, for example, but I don't see people picking up or observing seaweed, seashells. So this is just a personal observation. But what does a museum need more than anything is natural curiosity.
Curiosity, yeah.
To learn and explore and find out about your neighbors and your family and newcomers and old timers and the entire community, the entire environment we need to learn
about.
Well,
as you were saying before, the program's a very insular community and very compartmentalized.
It is. And I think much of that has to do with traffic problems.
Well,
the roads are clogged with traffic. And so when you get home, you kind of want to stay at home.
That's
it's
right.
Not such a pleasant thing to go somewhere else. But on the other hand, I do see population changing, even in the 3 years I've been here. For example, people using the Metro Mover downtown. I think they're finally catching on that, guess what? You can take the train to Government Center.
And you don't have to park.
And you get on the Metro Mover, and you can make a stop at History Miami, at Perez Art Museum Miami, at Future Frost Science Museum, the Arch. There's so many things to do. Bayside, it's all on that loop. And so exploring your city is getting easier, and people are becoming more comfortable with it.
Tell us about what makes the Haitian Heritage Museum unique, and how is it like other museums?
Okay, what makes the Haitian Heritage Museum unique, I really believe, is because we are not just predominantly focusing on the Haitian people. And I say that because when we got into the community, I wanted the museum, and Serge wanted the museum, to be like how we grew up. Yes, we're proud about our culture, but we need to be more inviting about other cultures, because how many times can you tell the Haitian story before somebody's like, okay, you know, tell me more about Papa Dog. It's like,
so it's not
the
all
story.
Toussaint Louverture.
It's not all Toussaint Louverture, correct. And we wanted to get away from that, and that's why we were talking earlier. We did a program called Dancing in the District. And that program was basically like bridging cultures, because at the end of the day, it's like if you don't, you know, yeah, you want to come to the museum and learn about Toussaint Louverture, but then you go and you learn about Toussaint Louverture, and then what else am I going to bring you back to see? So we were like, okay, we have to look at this from an aspect of, okay, I'm a Miami Floridian person. I want to come to a museum, but what is going to get me there? People love to eat, people love to dance, and people like to have fun. So food is a commonality. So what we would do, we're like, okay, we're going to do the Dancing District, very similar to Dancing with the Stars. You know, 1 week was, you know, Samba week. The next week was, you know, Latin, you know, what's the different dances. And then what we did during break and halftime, we put in compa so people can learn how to do compa. So every time we did like swing for, you know, 4th of July. So every time the people came, I mean, we had people come from Davie just to come hang out and do swing. But they came and they were able to see the museum facilities, then learn about our culture, but then get something that they wanted to do. So it was very, very great to do that because, again, it's all about bridging cultures. And recently we just have this exhibition called Rites of Passage. It's a partnership that we did with the National Museum of Kenya. And they have their rites of passage, the Maasai people. They do an interesting ceremony that they do for rites of passage. And we're like, well, we don't think this is going to work for South Florida. So let's infuse our rites of passage for the predominant communities here. So we had like the bar and the bar mitzvah for the Jewish community. We had the quinceanera for the Hispanic community. We had, of course, the first communion, which is also, you know, for the Haitian community and also for the Hispanic community. And that opened our doors to a whole new audience. We had the rabbi come over. We partnered up with the History of Miami. You know, we got items from the different synagogues. So for us, it's so important to show the connections and the connecting of the cultures and bridging the cultures, because we understand that South Florida kind of operates in a silo, and we don't want that. And being Haitian, Haitian Museum, the difference for us is that our culture and our history kind of cross a lot of different borders. We help South America get their independence. You know, we help the Americans fight in the war. So again, it's like being Haitian, that's the unique thing about our museum. We are basically interconnected with all of the community. And this is what we want to get out there, because people, when they think, oh, Haitian, oh, and they put you like just Caribbean, but we have been a very international island, you know, and I really believe that's why we just want to continue to connect our community.
Eveline Pierre is the co-founder and founder and executive director of the Haitian Heritage Museum. We're also with Serge Rodriguez, the co-founder and director of operations at the Haitian Heritage Museum, and Stuart Chase, president and CEO of History Miami. Our last break, and we'll be right back.
Interlude on our program.
We used to use that when they had Dancing in the District at the Haitian Heritage Museum, and that was the music I used to put under all the spots.
I see.
Yes.
You would know that. Well, we return. We're talking about museums and many other things, of course, with Eveline
Pierre,
Stuart Chase, and Serge Rodriguez. If you'd like to join in with a telephone call, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. Also, we don't have a lot of time. Perhaps you'd like to email. That's radio@wlrn.org.
What do you love about the Haitian Heritage Museum or History Miami? You can share your thoughts. And we are with Eveline Pierre. She's an author and founder and executive director of the Haitian Heritage Museum, along with Serge Rodriguez, the co-founder and director of operations, and Stuart Chase, president and CEO of History Miami. So speaking of joining cultures and all that, Serge, is it my understanding you're going to Nairobi, Kenya, under the auspices of the African American Museum Professionals Exchange Program?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Heading over there in about a week and a half.
Okay, so What is that?
Well, as Eveline mentioned just a little while ago, we are part of an exchange program that's being funded by Getty, where they've sent a curator down to spend a month with us here in Miami to prepare a children's exhibition on rites of passage. Now, we're in phase two, so we're going to head over to Africa for a month ourselves and we're going to curate an exhibition together with our colleagues in Africa to put together a children's exhibition there. Then we head to Morocco and do a convening about the whole experience of bridging cultures.
Oh, my.
Big time.
So rites of passage is what exactly?
Essentially, it's the taking a child from childhood into adulthood. Every culture has various different ceremonies that they do to take that child through that experience. As Evelyn mentioned, we have bar and bat mitzvah here in Miami, quinceañera. Well, they've got the enkipata over there and a series of other ceremonies that takes a young person from their youthful days to their elderly days.
Stuart Chase, tell us more about some of the upcoming and also the current exhibitions that really tickle your toes.
Well, we're particularly proud of our Operation Pedro Pan exhibition. It's a very innovative exhibition using a lot of technology, first-person interpretation through video format, video taping and recording Pedro Pans who tell their story of coming to America. That is one of our particularly great exhibitions as we round out our 75th year. We also have an Awakening Jamaica exhibition. These are these fabulous photographs from the late 19th century that show Jamaica to economic advantage. This is an economic development project in Jamaica that photographers from Scotland were brought in to photograph Jamaica in 1890, say. By 1893-95, these photographs were displayed at the Chicago World's Fair. Mm-hmm. And they had the key thing is they had their own pavilion. So instead of being in the Great Britain Pavilion, being a colony of Great Britain, they had their own pavilion to showcase Jamaica. So this was a very, very new thing, so very interesting. And then after that, we have a fantastic exhibition coming up on Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra spent a lot of his time here in Miami, not only performing at the Fontainebleau, but also doing films here and many other activities. We don't want to get too much into that, but a lot of activities here in Miami. So it's called Sinatra, American Icon. It's coming from the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles. And when it leaves us, it's going to the Olympics in Brazil. So it's a great opportunity for Miami to learn more about Frank Sinatra.
And I see you have a Family Fun Day, Textile Arts, on October 10th.
Yes. Second Saturday of each month is an absolutely free day, Family Fun Day, from 10 till 5 each Saturday, second Saturday of each month. And this month we have Spotlight Artists, Heritage Spotlight Artists for our folk art program. And this is a woman who does traditional textiles but also does Jewish ceremonial textiles. And she will be our artist in residence for 3 months, and so she'll have a series of programs. And this particular Family Fun Day is themed around her creativity and her act and her work, which will be on view in our folk art gallery.
And I see, what is the, on October 17th, you have something called Pedro Pan at 55, Lawyers and the Legal Profession, Looking Back and Looking Forward. What
exactly.
is that?
Another one of our Pedro Pan programs. It's with our 11th Judicial Circuit Historical Society, which is a part of History of Miami. They're going to speaking about the legal issues related to children's migration.
Ah.
And using, starting with Pedro Pan, but again, as we were saying earlier, bringing it to today and those issues that rely around legal issues with immigration to the United States.
And my last question that I have to ask you about, Stuart, you were talking about, you have a trip to Cuba planned. Tell us about that.
We are considering a trip to Cuba for research purposes. We have done research in Cuba in the past for our Guayabera shirt exhibition, which was really important. We won national awards for the research on that exhibition. So we want to get to Cuba before it changes too dramatically to collect the highly innovative objects that people have had to create themselves to exist in Cuba. So it's about innovation. We have other innovation aspects in our installations at the
museum. Due to scarcities, of course.
Yes, you know, taking, I don't have the right example, but taking a washing machine that somehow gets made into an air conditioning unit.
Right, right.
So how they were able to use whatever is at hand, it is actually a folk art tradition to use resources you have around you, and how do you create something new out of it? So before that all disappears in years to come, we want to make sure we have an opportunity to collect some of that material.
Yeah, you better get there.
Yes.
Quickly. And Serge and Eveline, what do you have planned at the Haitian Heritage Museum in the near future?
We're working right now on the Art Basel show that's going to open on December the 3rd, I want to say. Yes, December the 3rd, which is a young photographer who actually went to Haiti and took some really beautiful, awesome pictures from a different perspective. As you know, a lot of imagery that comes out of Haiti, it's not really always aesthetically pleasing. But this gentleman went there and he's showing the beautiful side of Haiti and showing how basically Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean art actually impacts the economy of where we are today. So that's going to be a great exhibition. And then for 2016, we have another exhibition, because we do our exhibition biannually. We're, like I said, we're a smaller museum, so it just makes sense to do them biannually. And we have a great one coming up for May, which is going to be awesome. And I don't want to say it yet, because it's going to be a really firecracker.
You're a small museum. On the average, about how many visitors would you get in a week?
On average, for a week, we get like a good like 10, 20 visitors. Because when people come to the design district, they're coming to shop, you know, Louis Vuitton, Prada, what have you. And then they fall into our location. They're like, what is this? And then you have a lot of European people. You have a lot of people from Asia. So when they come in, they're like really excited. And then we get a lot of people that find us on Groupon. We have a lot of people because, again, we have a Groupon promotion that's been going on for quite some time. And a lot of people come from New York, Boston, the Northeast, a lot of people from the Northeast, New Orleans, to come check us out. So we get like 10 to 20 visitors. Yep, a lot of people show up.
Well, we want to say that the Haitian Heritage Museum is at 4141.
Yes.
Northeast 2nd Avenue.
Correct.
And do they need that number? The
105C. I mean, even though they have a lot of markers out there that you can find us, but if you can't find us, the actual parking attendant, they know exactly where we are.
And HaitianHeritageMuseum.org.
.org, correct.
Yeah. And History Miami, of course, is at 101 West Flagler Street, and that's HistoryMiami.org.
And it's greatly expanded. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, the tremendous opportunity. We're proud of our sister organization, the Perez Art Museum Miami, with their new facilities, but guess what? Them moving out gave us a lot more space.
That's right.
So we've taken over that entire building with additional storage facilities, some office spaces, but huge gallery spaces so that we can have 3 to 4 exhibitions on a view at a time. So currently you can see Awakening Jamaica, Operation Pedro Pan, Folklife Gallery, and our History and Ourselves Gallery. So lots of opportunities to see new materials every time you come to see the museum.
And it seems like the trend in all museums now is some more interactive exhibits, I suppose.
Absolutely.
You're following along those leads, both museums.
Absolutely.
Well, the ones online also are interactive.
Yes, we have a lot of material online, both for educational purposes, but also for the public for general use. And a lot of our academic publications are online also.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure having you, and Serge, have a great time in Nairobi.
Thank you much.
You'll have to come back and report.
Yes, I will.
We've been speaking with Serge Rodriguez. I just wanted to say, because you mentioned Frank Sinatra and the Fountain Blue, you had something to do with the Fountain Blue also when it was rebuilt, didn't you? Construction management.
Yes. I was with the Coscan construction firm at the time, and we were building the Fountain Blue 3. It was the third tower on the Fountain Blue property.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's Serge Rodriguez. He's co-founder and director of operations of the Haitian Heritage Museum. Also with us, Eveline Pierre, author, founder, and executive director of the Haitian Heritage Museum, and Stuart Chase, president and CEO of History Miami. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you all the way around. Thank you.
And that wraps up today's edition. It was produced by Polly Landis. Additional assistance from lead producer Richard Ives. Technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. For free audio archives and downloads, we have them at our website. That's WLRN.org. And more information as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And tomorrow's program is an update on the Everglades Restudy, or Restoration Project. Making inroads to saving the unique Glades ecosystem has been decades in the making and still faces many hurdles. We'll visit with the Director of Everglades Restoration Initiatives for the Department of Interior, Shannon Estenez. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now next on NPR News.